From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells.
Our next guest is Bill Nelson, NASA's 14th administrator. In March of 2021, President Biden nominated Bill to lead the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Nelson was confirmed by unanimous consent by the United States Senate in April, and he was sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris in May. Nelson chaired the Space Subcommittee in the U.S. House of Representatives for 6 years and later served as the ranking member on the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, where he was recognized as the leading space program advocate in Congress. Bill Nelson, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Hey, anytime I can be on something known as cool, I'm all for it.
Well, we're delighted to have you on the program. Maybe we can start with this. Can you tell us how your childhood informed you and motivated you to become a space shuttle astronaut on Columbia in 86 and to be such an advocate of NASA over the years?
Well, you're very kind. Obviously, you've done a little bit of looking into my background. I grew up, I'm a little country boy. I grew up on a ranch in a very small, developed part of Florida. It's not that way now because it's grown. But when I grew up, Melbourne, Florida. But I had the good fortune, because a lot of the kids from the scientists at the Cape, when we were in this mortal race with the Soviets, and they had surprised us with Sputnik and then surprised us with Gagarin for one orbit before we could ever get off the ground. Well, as they were developing the space program there at Cape Canaveral, I went to high school with the kids, and we had a very forward-leaning principal. Even Melbourne High School was known as one of the 10 best high schools in the country. So I had that good fortune of having that kind of educational base. And aeronautics and space have just always fascinated me, even though what I involved into, not as a science scientist, but as a political scientist. And so that was my early development.
Fascinating. Many people think about NASA, they think about Neil, Buzz, and Mike 52 years ago today, or maybe they think about the magnificent Hubble Space Telescope or possibly the Artemis program, which is coming up to go back to the moon. But what many people don't realize is all the attention and focus that NASA has been giving to studying our own planet. A lot of NASA resources go into studying planet Earth. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. If you really want to understand what's happening to our planet, you've got to understand what's happening to the atmosphere. And the agency that designs the spacecraft builds them and launches them and then turns a lot of them over to NOAA that operates them, that agency is NASA. We have the expertise here. So in addition to NOAA, primarily concentrated on its mission, including the National Weather Service, NASA supports NOAA, and in addition, we put up our own scientific satellites and spacecraft. So just recently, NASA announced that it is going to put up 5 great observatories, and this will be over the next decade. And they are going to look at the water, in other words, the oceans, the land. It's going to look at the ice, and it's going to look at the atmosphere. And it's going to form a 3D composite of exactly enabling and enhancing our existing spacecraft to know exactly what's happening. Because at the end of the day, if you want to mitigate climate change, you've got to measure it. And that's what NASA does.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Bill Nelson. He is the new NASA administrator. And I have to say, Bill, that I watched your confirmation there with your wife and your kids and the previous two administrators, along with Vice President Kamala Harris. And it was really exciting to me. I think it's because, you know, maybe for you drawing on all of this experience, especially with your keen interest in space, your interest in earth science, your interest in climate, to then have this only, and there's only one position like yours in the world, in the cosmos, shall we say. How impactful at this point in your career is this new post for you?
Well, first of all, I shouldn't be allowed to have as much fun as I'm having. but having said that, space is hard and space flight is risky. And I'm not just talking about human space flight. I'm talking about robotic space flight is risky because of look at all the missions that we've lost in the past. But why do we do it? And what about the age-old question? Well, you ought to be spending that money on Earth. And yes, I mean, my political bias is to help the least of these, our brothers and sisters. But I also know that another part of the character of the American people is that we are explorers, we are adventurers. We've always had a frontier. It used to be as the country developed, that frontier was westward. Now that frontier is upward. Mm-hmm. By the way, my grandparents were part of that expansion and homesteaded under the Homestead Act, 160 acres of land, which said if you work the land continuously for 4 years without a break, that the government would deed you 160 acres. And let me tell you where that 160 acres is today. It's at the north end of the space shuttle runway on the Kennedy Space Center. I don't see how they survived between 1913 and 1917, swatting mosquitoes, fending off alligators and rattlesnakes. But they were a hardy breed. And those were the pioneers. Now that frontier is upward.
It sure is. And I think that's the beauty of what you even have talked about with us in the last few moments, is tying together what we need to know here on Earth with what we're doing with such incredible scientific advancement in space, telling us about how our climate is changing, how the ice and the oceans are changing. And you really seem like the perfect person to represent that with your past. So I'm curious about the future. What are you outlining for the future? You talked a little bit about it, the five great observatories, but a little more.
Well, for example, later this year, we're going to put up a new telescope. And whereas the existing telescope, Hubble, which, by the way, was just recently fixed, and is bringing back images again. And I mean, this is like the little engine that said, I think I can, I think I can. It doesn't quit. It keeps going on and on. And of course, we have these beautiful pictures that have come back after the fix. But think what we're going to do next. It's called the James Webb Space Telescope. It's going to launch in French Guiana on an Ariane rocket. Lord, be with the French on launch day, please. And it is unlike Hubble that looks at a mass of the sky. James Webb is going to be positioned a million miles from Earth on the other side of Earth from the sun. It's going to deploy a blanket behind it to keep out any sunlight. And then it's going to look out, it's going to look at a keyhole in space. And it's going to look back, if you can believe this, 13.35 billion years to the light that was emitted just 150 million years after the Big Bang. We're going to see the light from the formation of the first galaxies. And what we're going to be able to see is not only the formation of galaxies, but the formation of other solar systems. And when we can see that, then we can determine with greater clarity the planets that revolve around those suns. And then we can be looking for another planet that has a habitable atmosphere such as ours. Wow. Now, that's pretty exciting to me. And this is part of our quest to find evidence of life out in the universe. The universe is so big, I can't conceive of it with my brain. And out there, is there another place where there's in another galaxy with another solar system, with another Earth-like atmosphere that probably has creatures of some type that may well be developed and civilized and hasn't been destroyed? Meantime, we're looking for life in our own solar system. So we're going to Mars, and there's a little helicopter flying around and trying to find a location, and it's become a scout far beyond its design life. It's now become a scout for the rover. And the rover's digging around, and it's going to pick up samples, and we're going to send another lander, and they're going to pick up samples and bring it back to Earth, and we're going to examine it. And we're going to Venus, and that clouded, just prohibitively clouded planet that, because it's shrouded in clouds, is so hot at the outside of the planet, and it'll melt lead. And we're going to look and see, is there any kind of life in that atmosphere? And so here's the sun, then there's Mercury, and it's hot, and then there's Venus, and it's hot. But what's in those clouds? And then there's Earth. And then the next one out is Mars. And those three rocky planets, we're going to see, is there any evidence that there was life there? And to what degree, in billions of years of bombardment and gases swirling and asteroids hitting it, was there any life at Venus? How about at Mars? This is all a part of our quest to try to understand our solar system and the universe. You think I'm excited about this?
Yeah. If you are just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're talking with Bill Nelson. He was just sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris as the 14th administrator for NASA after being confirmed unanimously by his peers in the United States Senate. Going back to JW, the James Webb Telescope, 26 years ago, the Hubble Telescope taught us to ask questions we couldn't even imagine asking. The possibilities of James Webb are just mind-blowing, and it's such a sensitive piece of technology. I've been watching the pictures over the last
10 years as this thing has been developing, and how important it was and how difficult it was to build these folding mirrors and everything. And it's just going to be extraordinary. What do you think the possibilities are?
Well, if you're looking back 13 billion years, I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised that we're going to find a whole new set of data, just like Hubble having scanned the heavens. We're going to look at that small little narrow keyhole, and we're going to see what's out there. And that's going to bring us all kinds of new information about the universe.
You know, Bill, for over 50 years, the Saturn V rocket system has been the big dog. You know, 7.8 million pounds of thrust. It was the biggest rocket ever designed and built. And now, finally, we're going to be able to eclipse it with the SLS, the Space Launch System, which is a system you can configure differently for different missions. Our friend Charlie Precourt, who's been on our program several times, Vice President and General Manager of Propulsion Systems at Northrop, his organization is designing and building the two solid fuel boosters. Can you tell us about this SLS Space Launch System and what it's going to do for us?
And Charlie Precourt is the best. It's been a privilege for me to know him for years and years, and he really is the best. And he's just getting to the point of retiring, and I know the folks around here don't want him to retire, and Northrop will be very wise to at least keep him somewhat in tow to utilize his vast knowledge. So the SLS is going to launch at the end of this year. It's the largest rocket ever, as you just described. The Saturn V is about a million pounds of thrust less. This is 8.8 million pounds of thrust, and it's evolvable all the way up to 10 million pounds of thrust on later iterations. It's going to enable us to go back to the moon with humans. It's going to enable us to set up like a mini space station or an outpost that will revolve about the moon. And that outpost will be where we can go to. We can use that as a way station, a staging area to send people down to the lunar surface. We can use it as a point at which in the vicinity we can assemble the future huge rocket that will take humans and supplies to Mars, which is a long way off. The moon's 3 days. Right now, under the technology we have, we're talking about 6-8 months to get there. And then you got to stay there a long time until the planets get back into alignment, and then you come home. That's a long time to sustain human life. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna be learning as we're on the moon, and we are going to be assembling things there. We're gonna go out. Eventually, we're gonna see asteroids mined. I think there's gonna be a big commercial industry, which we're already seeing. Not only the launch industry, look what's happened to it with commercial companies launching, namely one that you just mentioned, Northrop, launching cargo, SpaceX, launching cargo and crew, and soon Boeing, the Starliner, launching crew to the International Space Station. When you go far out, you got to have a big rocket. And that's what the SLS is.
It sure is.
Bill, you know, speaking of launching crew, back in 1986, as John has already brought up, you were fortunate enough to be, I think, a payload specialist, wasn't it, on the space shuttle Columbia. And, you know, we're pretty proud here in Utah, just like you're a proud Floridian. We all know about our U.S. Senator at the time, Jake Garn, who I think went through training with you. And he went, and then the next year you went. And so you've been familiar with the thrill of being launched as a member of the crew. Can you talk a little bit about that and then compare it, you know, fast forward to 2021, to July of 2021, Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos, Jeff going with the oldest and the youngest person ever in space. It's just mind-boggling, the learning curve and what's going on.
In the early part of the space shuttle program, NASA decided that it was going to fly other than the full-time professional astronauts. And so it first started flying university researchers and scientists. And then they got the idea that they ought to fly representatives of the Congress. Jake was the chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee that handled NASA in the Senate. I was the chairman of the Space Subcommittee in the House. Conveniently, Jake was a Republican. I am a Democrat. And so you got the tradition of NASA not only being bipartisan, but really it's nonpartisan. But 10 days after we landed on Earth, Jake flew in the summer of 85. I was in January of 86, and we returned to Earth, and 10 days later, Challenger launches and blows up. And so there was a big reassessment of the program there. Jake and I had to go through everything that the professional full-time astronauts did. We had to do all of the physical stuff, all the training. As a matter of fact, that was my first and only psychiatric exam. I used to tell my fellow senators, look, do you know I'm the only certifiably sane senator? So we went through all of that, but what a privilege. Jake did a number of experiments. I did 12 medical experiments. Now we're in a whole new era where billionaires are using their money to create technology. If there's any doubt about that, look what Elon Musk has already done. Very successfully. And now Branson, just to the edge of space and down, and Bezos, same thing, to the edge of space. But what Bezos is doing, he's taking it slow and methodically because he's building a big, big rocket that's even larger than the SLS that I described to you a moment ago. He's building that called the New Glenn, and he's going to have that as a workhorse in the stable of horses to get to space.
Bill Nelson is the 14th administrator for NASA. Bill, we very much enjoy listening to your vision and what is going to be happening in the future. I would also say, and I'll speak for Lynn, that we've had a number of NASA interviews, and everybody we talk to has tremendous enthusiasm and is, you know, is just really working hard to make these missions happen. So it's been really nice working with these folks, and also very nice speaking with you, and we wish you continued success.
Did you know that NASA was voted by a study committee that studies the whole of the federal government for the ninth year in a row the best place to work in the federal government? And I think it's reflective of what you just said. People are excited. They have a sense of mission. They are well motivated. Even during COVID, when everybody had to go home and they were working remotely, they didn't miss too many beats. What a privilege for me to offer any little bit of leadership that I can for this tremendous organization.
You're very fortunate. And there's nothing like watching the control room when the Mars rover is landing or when Ingenuity is doing its thing to watch the palpable excitement in the control room. You just find yourself fist pumping. So what a great job you have.
Well, thank you all for being fist pumpers. I appreciate that. I appreciate your enthusiasm as well.
Well, very good. Bill, thank you. And I understand that you're going to the launch, which I think is slated for Friday, the uncrewed launch, but continued success with that program.
Thanks so much. You all have a great day. Onward and upward.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.